How you doing, buddy?
I'm going to put my pants back on and I'm going back to goal.
Everyone who deserves to be a senator, take one step forward. Not so fast! Stan, Barry, John,
bugger.
Princeps.
What the f*** is that?
I will explain what it means.
Oh, good.
Yeah, you're welcome. There's still a shit ton of senators here.
Right. As long as we get the names and dates right.
It doesn't matter. It's Augustus.
I love that.
45.
Still love that. I've heard it like 6 times or whatever. Love it.
Yeah, very good. Very clever, DJ Rob.
Good job.
Last time on the show.
Yeah. Oh, just full disclosure for everybody. This is hour 3, actually hour 3.5, but anyway, hour show 3 and all the one night. So we're going to give you our all, but it's like the difference between a 20-year-old man and a 50-year-old man. His all isn't all that impressive, okay? But we're going to do the best we can.
Yeah, just lower your expectations with this hour.
You'll be fine. That's what I tell the missus. Look, no, cut it in half. Cut it in half again, and now I'm ready.
At the end of the last episode, he is now officially Augustus. He now basically controls everything. And to celebrate, he's gone away for a couple of years. Thank you, Rome, for giving me all the power and the new name. Love it. Right. Great. Really appreciate it. I'm outies. See you in a few years.
Now, let's drill down into this. He didn't have to go. He could have sent someone else. I mean, it's dangerous. There's going to be fighting. There's going to be unpleasantness. He could die. There could be an ambush, whatever. Why does he need to go when he's literally got everything he wants? He's got the Senate to beg him to stay on. He's got his new name. He's got his awards around his front porch, like we do Halloween with pumpkins and everything like that. So why does he himself have to leave town? Is he going to get the people to miss him by his absence? Or does he need to go earn some more bona fides like his adopted father had by going to Gaul?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's a combination of factors. I think he's a big presence. And having him around, everyone's always looking at him and whispering, and you know they're going, well, right. What do you think, Augustus? Should we choose the chicken or the fish? And he's like, I don't fucking know. Right. Just make up your own mind. And they're like, well, we can make up our own mind, but we're just wondering, what are you having? What do you think?
They haven't had to decide anything for such a long time.
Yeah.
Yet can they even decide between the chicken and fish? So yeah, a good point.
Well, I think he wants them to learn how to decide, and by not being there. And being in the far reaches of the empire, it's not like they can send him a text and ask him what he thinks. They have to kind of learn to work it out for themselves. He's like, look, you're the Senate. I gave you back the power. You gave it back to me, but I'm giving it back to you and just
like
run
the
things, okay? I think that's part of it. Within limits. Don't do anything I wouldn't do. By the way, I'm leaving Agrippa and Maecenas here just to make sure you don't do anything I wouldn't do. If you have any questions, ask them.
Right.
But I think the more important part of it, though, is, as you pointed out, in order to sort of justify his new role, he needs to be out there kicking asses and taking names and giving Romans what they want, which is conquering barbarians. Nothing Romans like more than conquering barbarians.
A nice, safe foreign war far away. We're not being inconvenienced. You bring back a bunch of loot and honor, and then we get to have a parade and have a party when you come and celebrate. So, yeah, it's ticking all the right boxes. War with a foreigner, far away, bring back booty. I mean, it's a guaranteed win.
It's reminding me of a particular culture that exists today. I'm just that
really
enjoys their foreign wars against dark-skinned people of different religions or different socio-political views, and really gets their jollies out of it. I can't.
Canada
could be. It's probably what I'm thinking of. It's probably Canada. Fuck you, Canadians. With your good-looking, moderate, funny prime minister, sorry.
Right, yeah. They look good without tans. I just hate that about people. But anyway, yeah, no, so.
Before Octavian, sorry, Augustus, before, that's going to take some getting used to. Before yes. Augustus leaves Rome, though, he has to reopen his anus.
No,
no,
close.
Wait, sorry, let me read that again.
Put a J in front of it.
They have to reopen the gates of the temple of Janus.
Much, much better.
Janus. I think they pronounce the J with a Y, Janus, so it's right. Julius Janus. Caesar. So it's the temple of Janus.
Yes. Where, heard that before.
I am the great Cornelio!
So, because the peace is officially over. We had pieces. The peace, but now...
That I brought you.
Yeah. Now the peace is in pieces. We're going to war, baby!
That's right. Because it, we're going to get into this later, but there are huge tracts of land in Spain that are not under Roman control. They're not paying taxes or homage or whatever, and so... Why not? We're going to get to that later. But yeah, like we were saying, it's been a while, like, as far as Gaul. Have they been paying their taxes? Who do they give their allegiance to? They themselves haven't been able to answer this question. So he's got to go put to rights all these vast territories that will, again, once they come under control, be sending Rome a lot of loot. And that's what Rome is all about.
And the people are fucking excited about this, man. They can't be like, more excited.
Woo-woo! Ugh. And then there's even some bumper stickers on the back of carts that says, go fuck up Britain again, you know, something like that. I mean, these people are, they're just excited about this. There's going to be a war that's far away, the best kind of war.
Yeah. This is what the Romans love, as I said. Bringing back booty, there's going to be parties, triumphs, ovations. But they are particularly keen and they're trying to convince him to go and finally do what his father started, is invade Britain.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, man. Go and invade those Britons, man.
That's right.
As we know, Julius was the first Roman to land on the island twice.
Mm-hmm.
And they agreed to pay tribute to Rome the last time he was there in 54. But right. We don't know how often that actually happened, seeing as the civil wars started 5 years later. There have been rebellions in Gaul. Yeah. Maybe they were just like, let's not pay it and see if they notice.
Yeah, no, very few checks cleared, but Rome didn't have time to worry about that. And they knew what they were doing because they sold their stuff on the mainland. So they had word of what was going on. And so they tempted Rome and Rome didn't answer back. So they went back to the way they were before Julius Caesar ever showed up.
But we also have to remember that they were still fairly primitive when Julius Caesar went there, and there wasn't a lot of resources on the land. I mean, there was tin, apparently, and there was that rumor that their name comes from the land of tin. I don't think that's really supported by etymology. But
tin and chariots, that was it.
Roman traders, in the meantime, had started dealing directly with the Brits, cutting out the Gaulish middlemen. As we know, Roman traders love to get out there and figure out what they can sell, what they can buy. Every time an army breaks down the trade barriers, those businessmen are in there, man, trying to exploit it, looking for new opportunities. Nothing much has changed
there. And
that
hasn't changed. Exactly. Thank you.
Yeah. They called it the Marshall Plan. There was a Roman guy, Marshall, who went over. But in 43 CE, so almost a century later, the Roman traders set up a permanent trading settlement in Britain. Do you know what it was called, Ray?
The future name of London Town, Londinium? Is that how you say it?
Londinium. They set up a permanent trading hub called Londinium on the Thames.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to get a glimpse of how the Romans at the time saw the Britons. They saw them as like the big bad, like the Parthians. They were enemies who needed to be fucking crushed. Conan, what is best in life? Do you remember how that goes?
To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and hear the lamentation of their women. Is that it?
That's right. In that order, bitches.
I don't know. I pulled that out of my ass. The poet Horace, who we've talked about a lot, wrote a poem. He said, "Augustus will be deemed a god on earth when the Britons and the deadly Parthians have been added to our empire." Now, what the fuck have the British done to deserve this? Now, you won't find me defending the British much, as you know.
Right.
Fucking hate the British, not as individuals. Sure.
No, just as a group.
But the British, I mean, they were the cause of so much bloodshed and violence over the course of history, right. Always blaming it on other people, but, you know, really just a bunch of fucking arrogant cunts, a lot of them.
Shit. But
so
I think what can't...
I'm not talking about the individual people. Fine people, the individual peoples. I'm descended from some. I'm talking about the aristocracy, right?
Right.
What have they ever done to be declared the greatest enemies of Rome at this point?
Well, see, that's just it. We have to be careful and make the distinction. For the people who have listened to this podcast and for the people that have listened to Alexander the Great, we all appropriately fear, I think, have some fear when it comes to the Parthians. I mean, I get that. The idea of fearing the Britons doesn't seem natural to us. Yeah, Caesar was over there, but if he wasn't stranded from his base, from his supplies, and from reinforcements, he would have kicked so much more ass than what he probably did. And so for us, this doesn't make any sense. This is apples and oranges. But for the Romans of that period, because they were on a island, you know, at the edge of the world, and they were, not much was known about them, they were considered brutes and barbarians, ergo, like the Parthians, and they both needed to be crushed and then incorporated into the Roman Empire because they didn't deserve anything better than to be the slaves of the Romans. And when that day came, Augustus, again, would be deemed a god because it would be such an amazing event to humble these two groups of savages. That's
Michael
my people!
Henry Harris. Ain't ever been to Paris. Virginia is where he calls home. He looks just like a garden gnome. He drinks limoncello. His mama said it'd help him grow. He's a redneck from Virginia. Or a man of men to say. He went to Vegas with Cam and met J. David Markham. They took Caesar Alexander and Napoleon as well. They play music for too long. Language can be strong, and Ray never does his homework, so Cameron's sending him to hell. I guess Ray's day job could be worse. He's some kind of goddamn nurse. When they gave him the clipboard, it was the best day of his life. But his talent is most rich, being Cameron Riley's bitch, until he reaches redneck heaven and takes his cousin for his wife.
I believe you could, too.
Yep. Ye fucking haw.
I don't know, I just wanted to hear that again. Martin Darlington. Okay. Speaking of I was just thinking of fucking British scum, and I thought of Martin Darlington, so I...
Oh, my God. First of all, I'd like to clarify, I am not a redneck from Virginia. I am a redneck from South Carolina. All right? Very different thing.
But you're in Virginia now, so that's what
I am. So, okay, yeah.
So the Romans wanted to see India conquered as well, just like Alexander kind of almost did. He didn't really get much of the way into India, but conquered
a
bit of it.
The monkeys and the rain stopped him.
Dangers in the devil's in the details. Don't worry about the details.
True.
Sure, he conquered India. He got there. That's enough. He would have conquered it. Had he stuck around.
These Romans are getting pretty heady. They want the Britons, the Parthians, and the Indians smashed and incorporated. That's pretty heady stuff for people who were killing each other just a year ago.
Victories over dangerous and exotic foreign races. That's what they want. They want to make Rome great again.
Shit.
Let's go out and conquer some barbarians, man. It's what we do best.
Jeez. Yeah. Yeah.
And around this time, there was actually a power struggle in southeastern Britain. Some of the tribes were fighting each other, which would have been a perfect opportunity for Augustus to make a play. And in fact, at least twice during his reign, British rulers travelled to Rome and begged him to get involved and to restore mm-hmm. them to their thrones. And it seems like at one point he may have given it serious consideration. There was a fleet of transport ships gathered on the coast of Gaul. He may have been planning to invade, or it might have just been a threat. Gunboat diplomacy, as we right. talked about on the Cold War series a while back. you don't actually invade. You just have your boats there that look like they could invade. And exactly. just like the stick diplomacy. Big stick.
I tried to drill down into that. We don't know a lot of it. We don't know the vast majority of it, unfortunately. But I think what I was able to find out was whatever the problem or situation was, the fact that Caesar or one of his agents had a couple of boats gathered on the coast across from Britain was enough to scare them into agreeing to whatever was going on. So I think you're right. I think it was for show. He had really no intention at that point, and we'll get into this in a minute. But as far as this particular case goes, I think it was just a gesture to frighten them, to get them to agree to whatever he wanted, because he's going to be focused on Gaul for a while. But again, I mean, he knows that the people are screaming for him to do this. But again, as we've said, he is a very moderate, conservative person who is not going to let emotions rule him. And he's going to make sound, at least most of the time, sound decisions.
And plus, he knew from Julius Caesar's own experiences that invading Britain was going to be a major fucking exercise. I mean, yeah, remember, Julius got stranded there at one point when his ships right. got destroyed by storms. And he only barely got back. It could have been the end of him there. So, and it's also backwards, as I said before. So, what's the upside of invading Britain? They don't have anything of value to take. They're poor.
They made horrible slaves.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine Thomas Mackett as a slave. I mean, really? Really? You look at him and you go, he's not going to do anything. Lazy fucker's just going to sit around on his fat, white fucking ass.
No, but here's the point, though. I'm going to invade Britain. It's going to take freaking years. I'm going to lose a lot of men, spend a lot of money, and I'm not going to get a lot out of it. And I have to hold it once I take it. It's just a bad investment. And I don't think he ever seriously considered, even for a second, going that route. Because after everything he's done and sacrificed and learned, that would just be the stupidest mistake he could possibly make.
And in fact, it takes another century before Roman warships circumnavigate and actually confirm it's an island and how big it actually is. And that's a big job too. You don't want to invade somewhere if you don't really know how big it is and right. what's up north. So he takes the...
It might end up like Parthia. Yeah, he just keeps going and going and going. There's always an enemy on the horizon. You need to know that stuff before you launch an attack.
Exactly. An enemy that can, that you have to then defend against forever.
Right.
Augustus takes the same cautious view with Britain then that he did with Parthia. We remember after he finished with Antony and Cleopatra, he did a peace deal with the Parthian kings. Look, you stay mm-hmm. in your place, I'll stay in my place. Give me back the standards. Let's fucking call it quits.
Right. Because that's what
I'll give
want,
you back
yeah.
our hostage. It's all good. He does the same thing with Britain. So let's just avoid a risky, expensive war unless it's absolutely unavoidable. And this gets back to the speech that, according to Dio, he gave to the Senate. Look, just treat our foreign enemies with respect. Avoid war with them unless we have to. By the way, we have to in Spain because they're fucking up shit there. So I have to go and deal with that right now.
And just real quick, I mean, this has been going on even before the time of Gaius Marius, when we've mentioned people have come, hey, I've lost my throne, please help me get it back and I'll give you money. Rome has heard that question or request many, many times over the centuries, and they've only ever said yes if they truly were going to get something out of it. So these people from Britain can come, but since Augustus can't see a clear and impressive benefit to himself and his state, there's no way he's going to say yes. And that's just the type of leader that he is. He's not looking for an adventure. He's looking, for solid gains that are safe over time.
So he goes to Gaul, where he spent several months receiving petitions and beginning the process of holding a census, which is interesting.
Nice. He's big on census.
Yeah, he likes to count things. He should have been a bookkeeper. It had only been 30 years since Julius Caesar had conquered it, and it sounds like mm-hmm. he wanted to learn more about what they had their hands on, really. As we know, during the, when we're doing the Caesar series, the numbers that Caesar said about who was here and how many people in this tribe and how right. many people he killed, kind of all over the place and weren't very credible. They'd sort right. of just look at a whole group of, well, how many people do you reckon are there? 100, 150,000? I'd say two. Right, two. Write down 200,000.
Double
that sounds
yeah.
impressive. Yeah. So he's going to do an actual census.
Right, yeah, you've got to know what's there so you can exploit it properly and control it and all this stuff. And I'm embarrassed to admit this as a former Christian, but was it Augustus who was in charge when they did the census for baby Jesus and mommy and daddy and they had to flee away? Was he the one who was still governor, or was that Tiberius or whoever after him? Do you know? When Rome counts everybody in their empire?
Is this a serious fucking question, dude?
I'm just curious. I mean, because we're mentioning census here, and
you're an embarrassment.
I just don't
really.
Know.
You're an embarrassment.
I don't know which Romer it was.
Okay,
Roman
okay,
it was.
Okay, stop. When was Jesus supposedly born?
Zero.
There is no zero. Dick nuts. Supposedly,
I only know
year
he lives about 30 years.
Year yeah. one, give or take a few years.
Right.
When did Augustus die?
That'd be giving it away. Whisper it to me. Was it 14?
14 CE.
I don't remember. 14. Okay. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
yes, Augustus was still okay. around.
All right. Well, but, I just didn't know. Yeah.
But it wasn't like a Roman census. It was a census of Syria, Judea, part of Syria, Roman Judea. He may have been doing an empire-wide census. But anyway, it's right. kind of, yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to ask. You don't have to. Exactly. All right. So he's in Gaul. He's sizing things up. He's getting clear information because that's how this Caesar's mind works. And so he's gathering all this information. What exactly is his in his province of Gaul?
Yeah. And by the end of the year, he was in Tarraco, modern Tarragona, the capital of nice. The province of nearest Spain.
Nice.
And at the beginning of 26 BCE, he took up his 8th consulship, even though he
Woo!
Is in Spain.
Psh, rules don't apply to him.
And this time his colleague is Statilius Taurus.
Nice. Nice name.
This is Taurus's 2nd consulship. Mark Antony made him Suffolk consul back in 37 BCE. You may remember Statilius Taurus was the guy who Antony sent with a fleet to help defeat Sexy P. After that, he went to Africa, which he conquered without much trouble and was awarded a triumph in 34 BCE. When he got back to Rome, he started work on building their very first permanent amphitheatre, which he paid for out of his own pocket. Later on, he took Augustus aside during the Civil War, fought for him at the Battle of Actium, and now mm-hmm. he is the consul back in Rome. Back to you, Ray.
Quick question. Thank you. That was when he Mark Antony loaned him the fleet so he can kick Sexy P's ass. And in return, he was supposed to give Marcus Antonius 20,000 men, when in fact he gives him 2,000 men after he's already gotten his ass kicked in Parthia. Again, Marcus Antonius' biggest mistake was trusting Augustus.
Yeah. I don't think he trusted him, but did a deal that he had to rely on. He probably didn't think he'd need those 20,000 troops because he was such a fucking
so
kick-ass
awesome.
Awesome general. Yeah, he was just gonna.
I'm a kick-ass.
Yeah, the Parthians were gonna just bow down to him as soon as he walked in there because they're like, "Fuck, dude, you got an awesome beard, man.
You look like Hercules. We give up."
Yeah. Back to Spain. So there had been some recent disturbances, as I mentioned earlier. A few of the remaining tribes in the northwest that hadn't been fully capitulated because they were hiding behind some mountains. And this is going to be the excuse for Augustus's first war as princeps.
Yeah. Is it, how's it pronounced? Is it the Cantabrian mountain range? I'm not sure how to say it, but that's the mountain range that they're hiding behind. They literally, like everybody else has done before, they'll come out, raid, take what they need, get the hell back behind it. And so Rome has never taken the time or committed the resources to truly pacify in this area. But see, this is what's brilliant about Caesar. Excuse me, Augustus. He has a campaign in front of him. It's got a nice beginning, a nice end, because if you go too far, there's the Atlantic Ocean right there. It can't keep going on like Parthia would. I can defeat these people, get some military glory. It can't spill out. And I've got a good excuse because they're messing with parts of nearest Spain that belong to Rome. So this is a nice set, limited package for Caesar to focus on. And it was very smart of him, even though it sounds like common sense, it was very smart of him to focus on this as opposed to something in Parthia or wherever else. This makes a lot of sense. This is where he can get a name for himself, his own credits, if you will. And it's something that he can look forward to and get this done in relatively short amount of time. And it doesn't hurt that he has his wife with him and probably a couple of girlfriends as well.
It also doesn't hurt that Spain is Rome's oldest province. They've been there for centuries.
Damn.
It's not like he's going into some brand new place and having to kick ass and take names like Caesar more or less did in Gaul.
Right.
Rome has been in Spain since the struggle against Hannibal and Carthage back in the 3rd century BCE. It's where the first permanent Roman garrisons outside of Italy were ever set up. So they've been around a long time. So that means that there's a lot of Roman infrastructure there for him to leverage, call upon. But the flip side is it's also been caught up in the various civil wars. So there's a lot of bad blood, ill feeling towards the Romans in Spain, not only because they've been sort of living with Roman garrisons for a couple of hundred years, which tends to piss people off, but also they've been fucked over by a whole variety of proconsuls and and different armies during the civil wars. By the way, did you know that Spain is where the gladius originally comes from?
I did not know that.
The full name of the sword is the gladius hispaniensis. The Hispanic sword. It's where the Romans first saw that sword. Their swords before that were very different. They discovered it there and went, fuck, we're going to take that. Good idea.
That's badass.
Well, as we know, that's what the Romans were great at. They didn't have any of this not made here syndrome. They saw a good idea anywhere. Fuck, we're taking that. That's awesome. Oh, what we could do with that. They were like, sort of Steve Jobs going to Xerox PARC. Oh, what do you call that thing? A mouse? A color monitor? Oh, fuck. I'm going to take that home. You got no idea what I could do with that.
Take it with this little spy camera. Anyway, but yeah.
According to Livy, the first Roman to use a gladius was Titus Manlius, because he had a fucking gladius, Torquatus. He's a great guy. We should do a whole fucking series on this guy at some point. Well, some episodes anyway. Around 340, according to Livy, he accepted a challenge to single combat by some big fucking Gallic soldier at a bridge over the Arno River, where the Gauls and the Romans were encamped on opposite sides, because they had obviously been fighting well before Caesar went in there. And Manlius just saw a Hispanic sword lying around and picked it up, went, fucking, I'll have that, son, and thrust it twice under the shield of the Gaul, killing him. Then he removed the Gaul's torque, T-O-R-C, which was a large, rigid neck ring made of metal that the Gauls would wear, and it was made from metals sort of twisted around each other, like entwined. Wow. Which is, why it was called a torque, from the word torque. You know, if you twist something, you get torque, potential energy built into it. So, that was called a torque, and he placed it around his neck, which was why he got the cognomen Torquatus.
Nice.
By the way, the word
the
word gladius is also where we get the word gladiator, if you'd never worked that out before, means swordsman.
or glad he ate her.
Yes. Hold on a second. I got to shut my door. I think my family's home.
Okay.
Which means it's going to get hot in the old office.
It's getting hot in here. Yeah.
So as I said before, the Roman conquest of Spain hadn't always gone well. Lots of massacres and treachery. Treachery? Treachery, not treasury. One of Julius Caesar's officers wrote of how his men decorated a parapet with the severed heads of their enemies. They literally pulled a fucking Sulla. And as Napoleon found out 1,800 years later, the Spanish didn't take well to being conquered.
Right. Well, that was one thing I didn't really appreciate before, because the life there had been so hard, because the Romans had been there for hundreds of years and there's been fighting going on. The Spaniards were pretty tough people, pretty good fighters. And so leave it up to a Roman to actually incorporate some of them or use them as our allies or mercenaries or whatever. Like, yeah, you're really good at fighting because it's hard for us to kill you. Tell you what, next time I have a fight with someone else, I'm going to come in here and hire a bunch of you guys because you're so badass. So again, the Romans are just very good about being objective, and they couldn't just hate these people and never work with them. They actually hired a lot of them as mercenaries for other fights, other campaigns. And again, but when they had to fight him, it was always ugly, and there always seemed to be torture and extreme brutality on both sides.
Mm. Now, these Cantabrian mountain ranges you mentioned before, as you said, there were tribes above those that had sort of been able to shield themselves from Roman occupation for the last couple of hundred years. Right. But the rest of the Spaniards had found themselves caught up in the Roman civil wars as Roman generals would duke it out in Spain, as we saw with the Pompeians and the Caesarians during Caesar's civil war. There was recent excavations in the last 10 or so years at Valencia in Spain. They found skeletons of men tortured and executed during the fighting between Pompey and Sertorius. During the Sertorian War, which happened during the reign of Sulla, this is sort of where the young Pompey made his bones, and when he came up with this thing. You know what? I'm so fucking great. Why don't you just call me the Great from now on? I'd love to go back and actually do a whole series of episodes on Pompey and Sulla and Marius. I don't think we covered them in anywhere enough detail. It'd be great to do those years at some point.
You're absolutely right. Maybe when we finish off with Augustus, we can do that before we decide what else we're going to do. But yeah, that would be cool. And even just the war between Pompey and Sertorius. I mean, that was an amazing clash, because Pompey made a lot of mistakes. He learned along the way. Sertorius was, even though he's still relatively young, he was an experienced fighter. And it's an amazing story between these two. I would love to go back and pick up pieces and really examine them. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, he was an interesting guy, Sertorius. Sort of kind of friendly with Marius, but also didn't think much of Marius. But he ended up on Marius' side during the fallout with Sulla and all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
So anyway, as we've seen in the old series, Roman traders and soldiers had settled in Spain, even staying there during times of conflict, which makes us go, why? Why?
What the fuck?
Why would you stay there when shit's going down? But quite a few Spaniards had profited from allying themselves with Rome. And the most famous is our old friend Balbus, who I mentioned before, just as a reminder. He fought with Pompey during the Sertorian War. Pompey ended up giving him to Julius Caesar, I think, when Caesar went to Spain. Mm-hmm. Years later, Caesar had some sort of, I can't remember, he was a praetor or something in Spain. Quaestor maybe in Spain. Anyway, he was in Spain at some point. I can't remember what he was doing there now. Early on in his career, and Pompey was going, hey, I got a guy. Hey, I got a guy.
Good with money. He knows the land.
Knows the land, knows the people, speaks the lingo. You need this guy. And Balbus obviously goes on to be one of Julius Caesar's most trusted confidants, and then also becomes Rome's first foreign-born consul in 40 BCE. And believe he played a large role in helping the young Octavian get established in his early days. And by the way, after his consul in 40 BCE, disappears from the record. We don't know what happened to him after that. Year of his death isn't known. We do know that he kept a diary of the chief events in his own and Caesar's life, but it's gone.
Oh, man. I would give your left nut to have that. That would be amazing. And just to let everybody know, for the when he was consul in 40 BC, yeah, that was a Suffolk consul. But still, the fact that Caesar did that, knowing it would piss so many people off because he was a foreign-born consul, but he had done so much for Caesar, he had to thank him, along with thanking a lot of other people. But again, that's a very big deal. Again, someone like Caesar who thinks outside of the box would have no trouble doing that.
By Caesar, you mean which Caesar?
Julius Caesar, I apologize.
Yeah, Julius Caesar was dead in 40 BC.
No, not Julius Caesar. Shit, sorry. Yeah, this Caesar.
Yeah.
Augustus.
Do you want to phone a friend?
Yeah, I do. I really, really do.
You got it? Sorry. Got any friends?
Yeah, but again, it was a big freaking deal. So, yeah, so.
Now, Balbus was from Cadiz, modern Cadiz, which is a very large port city in southwestern Spain. Back then, even, it was a prosperous trading center. It is the oldest continuously inhabited city in Spain and one of the oldest in Western Europe. And even back then, they were exporting olive oil and fermented fish sauce, including one called garum, which was very popular, apparently, in Italy and in Greece. And did you know, Ray, that ketchup was originally a fermented fish sauce?
No.
And Gary Arndt, our listener, who just won some big fucking award for his travel photography, he's like a professional, top, you know, world-leading travel photographer, fan of the shows. I was having this conversation with him on Facebook just yesterday. So ketchup. In the 17th century, the Chinese mixed a concoction of pickled fish and spices and called it ketchup. Ketchup.
Right.
And then the English discovered it when they were in Singapore and Malaysia and took it home with them. And the British went, fish? Oh, let's just make it with tomatoes. Mushrooms originally. And then the British ended up taking it to the American colonies. And that's...
Who made it even better.
That's where we get Heinz 57 from. But it was originally... fermented fish sauce. I told Chrissy that story. She said, that sounds fucking awesome. Anything fermented. She's been making her own kombucha over the last
Heather does
month
that.
Or two. Yeah.
I threatened to kick her out of the house. I said, that smells like shit. Get it out of here. But I'm not in charge, so I don't even know why I bothered.
Tastes good.
Anyway.
And it gives me the excuse saying, hey, I want to taste a little bit of your booch. Give me some of your booch. I want to dip my tongue in your booch.
No,
I get to say that several times a day, so that's worth it for me.
Now, I do know as far as Gades, it was such an influential area that what, like 500 of the men were Roman citizens, and some of them were even registered as equestrians. So obviously money talks, bullshit walks, and these guys were able to afford a decent amount of influence at Rome at the time. And remember... they're foreigners. Rome isn't exactly crazy about foreigners, but they will take anybody's money because that's what it means to be Roman.
Yeah, and like we saw in the Alexander series during the Hellenism period, when lands like this got conquered, you obviously had some people that fought against it, and you had some people who went, okay, well, this is an opportunity. I'm gonna get in good with the new rulers. I'm going to adopt their customs, their language. I'm going to figure out how to turn this to my advantage. Mm-hmm. We also see this in places in South and Latin America. If you look at Cuba, after the Americans sort of took over Cuba after the Spanish-American War, as we talked about on a recent Cold War show, 1898, and the Americans sort of... all the corporations go into Cuba, United Fruit, et cetera, set up over there. They're raping and pillaging the natural resources, the economic potential of Cuba. They install a series of pro-American puppet governments, the last one being led by Batista. But there was a lot of the locals who got on board with that. All right, well, let's get on board and play nice with the American and the Americans and the American puppet governments. They did quite well. But of course, when Castro came along in the 26th of July movement and overthrew that, the American puppet government, the people that were Cubans but had chosen the side of the Americans before and during the Civil War weren't happy mm-hmm. about that. They're the ones that ended up primarily going to Miami in the early stages and complaining about the communists because, yeah, they were doing well under the old regime. Yeah, they didn't want it to change. Everyone else was poor and broken, uneducated, and had no healthcare. But the guys that were doing well, they didn't want things to change. Anyway, it's the same in Spain. They were having gladiator games. There were theaters and amphitheaters built, music, drama. The locals, some of them, aspired to look Roman, act Roman, be Roman,
right.
do their hair in the Roman styles, wear the Roman togas, put the makeup on. Many Spaniards adopted Roman names before they gained citizenship. They had locally minted coins with Latin slogans on them instead of Iberian, their provincial language. It's what you would expect to happen. In most places, they get conquered. Which is why I said it's an easy place for Augustus to go in many ways, because a lot of Spain has been Romanized, as happened everywhere. You know, everywhere you go throughout France, throughout England, there's evidence of the Romanization. But it's important mm-hmm. to realize that it wasn't just the Romans that were doing these things. The people who settled there, the traders, the soldiers, the people went looking for opportunities. It was also some of the locals embraced it. You know, I, for one, want to welcome our new Roman aristocracy. And they would get on board the program. If you can't beat them, join them.
Exactly. Now, that's along the coast where there's a lot of trading going on and obviously a lot of affluence. But the further you go away from the coast into the land, the transition to being okay with Rome being there, to taking on Roman ways, that transition was a lot slower, even for the local nobility who would have prospered, because you're getting away from Rome's influence. And so when you get into central Spain, dominated by the Celt-Iberians, I'm not sure how to say it properly, but those were the people that had trouble with the Romans. Those were the ones who were giving Romans a lot of problems. They're fighting back and forth. And they spoke a Celtic language like the Gauls and the Britons, but it wasn't a fusion of their two languages. They had their own identity, their own customs, their own language. But again, because they're not coming under the sway of what it means to trade with Roman, they're the ones who are causing, over the centuries, Romans a lot of trouble. And now they're the ones that Augustus is going to have to deal with, because they like their way of doing things and they don't want to be controlled by anyone else.
Yeah, I don't think it was the Celtiberians that were the problem, though. And in fact, that's where the Hispanic sword comes from, the Celtiberians. I think north of the Celtiberians. So the Celtiberians controlled central Spain. That had been dominated by the Romans. But north of them...
Is that Cantabrians?
The Cantabrian Mountains, yeah. So there was the Asturians and the Cantabrians north of the mountains. They had fortified hilltop communities, as you would expect, and they were just hard to get into. And so not many Roman armies had tried to penetrate up there. And they'd been coming back down over the mountains and causing trouble for the Celtiberians, who were part of the Roman reach.
Gotcha. Sorry about that.
That's all right. Don't worry about the facts, Ray. You let me handle the facts, buddy. I got the facts. You're here to giggle. Here for your good looks and you're giggling.
Deal.
And so they've been coming down and harassing the Celtiberians, a bit like Julius Caesar's excuse for his original entry into Gaul. Remember, the Gauls were getting harassed by some Germanic tribes coming over the Rhine.
Oh, they need me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's doing the same thing. All right, well, this is any good. They're interfering with the ability of our Roman traders to do business. They're interfering with the livelihood or the safety of the Roman settlers, a bit like Hitler justifying his early invasions of Sudetenland. Look, they're being threatened. We have to go in. We have to save them. So that's his excuse. Now, as I mentioned a couple of times, it's not as risky as Britain or Parthia because it's been fairly well Romanized. It's going to take a few years. It's going to have its difficulties. It's less glamorous, maybe, than some of the more exotic locations of Britain or Parthia. But his job is to restore order and security to these provinces that he's been given. And so by spring, he's left Tarragona and gone north to join the army ready to pacify the Cantabrians. But, as we'll see in the next episode, wasn't going to be that easy. And he doesn't have Agrippa there to fucking get it done.
And oh, I feel faint.
Yeah. And I'm going to go out with this song.
Cam is a Nazi with a loud attitude who has more X-Ys than he has X-Cars. He rarely drinks, although he does indulge in his favourite vice, which is smoking cigars. His schoolboy humour is quite funny at times, although it can become a pain in the arse. But if you hear this, you'll know he can laugh at himself and that his ego isn't made of glass. Hey there, Cam of the left wing, do you believe in the things you say? Why, if you're a socialist, are you the keenest to get more pay? Just answer us the question, why? Ray gets besmirched for doing no research when you could have just kept J. David Markham.
Well, you need to remember, though, Cameron, that would never happen. You are entitled to boo and hiss on your own.
So though we are all knee-deep in the hoopla, your loyal listeners are still downloading shows. Especially the one that's still free to air, though that must hurt you as you like profit growth. But if you keep the music to shorter clips and Ray's research becomes a little less gash, we'll keep subscribing and donating to you till you can sleep atop a huge pile of cash. Hey there, Cam off the left wing, do you believe in the things you say? Why, if you're a socialist, are you the keenest to get more pay?
We are gonna make so much money.
Show me the money!
Greed is good.